Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome once again into the studio none other than the citizen lobbyist who has been, if not around the world, around some very interesting places. And she's back here with fresh eyes, maybe going to be able to see things that we've had trouble seeing. Welcome, citizen lobbyist.
How you doing, Mike? Good to be back.
I'm doing well because I've just come back, of course, too, from both Kotzebue and Denver. And nice different locations. And so I'm realizing that not everywhere is the same. Last night, City of Palmer had a meeting. And it was a fairly short, if you will, meeting. They had two meetings, actually. There was a report of the audit at 6 p.m. And that was pro forma. It was pretty much the auditor, external auditor, coming in and saying good things, generally, that the city's processes are in order and things look pretty good. And, of course, this was bookended during the regular meeting by the city manager sitting and walking through the budget at this sort of midpoint and not requesting any money. Last year, those who remember that he...
His first year.
He requested money, and that turned out not well in one sense. He was requesting it sort of to be ready for a couple things. And the council seems to like to be very specific in these kind of changes and requests. But he did a good job, I thought, just observing that. And that was one of the highlights of the meeting. The second one was kind of an interesting discussion that danced around what I thought I'm looking forward to as a fascinating look toward the future. And that is, how do we handle in the city Airbnb? Because other cities have dealt with this issue.
I know. I'm familiar with a couple of them.
Okay. So having said that, the council didn't yet get to it. Mentioned it, but didn't, because they were focused on their own processes. And in particular, there were two pieces to the ordinance that was proposed and under discussion. The first one, dealt with adding a landlord license, and the second dealt with removing a requirement to have an applicant for business license demonstrate that they had a state business license.
So was the business license regarding landlords have to do with the Airbnb, or was that something totally separate?
Potentially it could be a foundational discussion that would lead later on. But part of the back story to it, I think, best way to put it, is a question that people brought up around when a person, say a person has a home and they have room and they have someone who is going to be staying there, sharing the house.
Full time.
So now... you can think about circumstances where you have perhaps a child that comes back home, or you have a brother or sister or someone who comes in and they're going to live. And they say that circumstance, scenario A, a sister who's coming back, she's going to stays in the house and pays you money to share because she's using the place. Mm-hmm. Is that a business arrangement that requires a business license?
I would say not normally. I don't know any, I can't think off the top of my head any cities that have that, that require roommates to file any paperwork with. Of course, then you get into zoning, whether it's a single residential zoning or is it, but people don't often go that, I think, that deep, do they? Or is that true?
And that may be one of the points that emerged here is, how deep do you want to go into the relationships among the people that are in a house? Mm-hmm. Or secondly, what about where? Can this be okay in one place and not another? Is there some kind of zoning requirement that we want to impose here? And what about perhaps this being extended to the point where you have a house that is filled with people because there's a large group that wants to live cheaply? And they pay a small amount of money and they get a small...
So in their code, they must have a definition for residential.
Yeah, and that discussion, that part of it either escaped my memory or they didn't go there. But they were struggling with the process in part of how to handle the discussion of this ordinance. And ultimately, they'd made no decision to accept it. They sort of tossed it aside and gave it to the manager and said, okay, well, you know, let's
do it. So you started the explanation of it talking about Airbnb. So was that something totally separate or something they want to look at later?
That was something peripherally mentioned that was not in focus. Mm. It was my own desire that I was expressing to encourage them to actually
look at that
because you've probably...
So yeah, I do have a story about that. Actually, I grew up in Southern Oregon and I have a friend who runs a very active B&B down there. It's a touristy area. And I just talked to her about this, and they had something in their code about this, but no real enforcement. And when they went to enforce it, because the people that were licensed to do it and actually running a B&B and reporting taxes on it, which helps support the infrastructure of the city, they found out that about 75% of the rentals were not registered. And they did a sweep through, and it was thousands upon thousands of dollars that changed in their revenue scope. Plus, it made the people that had gone through the somewhat arduous, where these people are probably not as much here, task of getting a license, getting inspected, really being a reliable business and paying their taxes on the sale of the rental on those rooms. So it leveled the playing field for a lot of people. And it captured a lot of revenue that supports the city and the services that everyone enjoys. So I think that's wise that they do that. I think there's probably a fair amount of people that are doing B&Bs around, and they probably split. Some of them would not want to mess with the sales tax deal, but there's some that would just say, hey, I'll pay my fair share. Just tell me how to do it.
Right.
So they should bring. I would hope that would come up and be on their radar at some point.
So I wonder if there are two facets of changing lifestyle here. Obviously, there have been discussions even at the state level regarding Uber and Lyft and the rest of that. And there's seemingly to me a pushback that comes from both established taxi mm-hmm. companies and established motels mm-hmm. looking at this and saying, we have to go through all of this. Mm-hmm. What's the story? Mm-hmm. You've witnessed that. You've seen it. It's been mm-hmm. discussed in other communities, Anchorage, mm-hmm. other places. So I think this is something that is probably not going to, from the feeling I have about how it's developing across the country, something that will be excluded from Palmer, and all of that will require some discussion.
You think it will be excluded or it won't be?
There are two things. One, I think the discussion will have to happen. Mm-hmm. And two, it looks to me trying to hold back the river. You know, you can do that for a little while, mm-hmm. but eventually, if indeed, as it seems, that variations on these themes for Uber, Lyft, and Airbnb are being right. worked out with maybe with the experience of other communities being able to say, okay,
this is how we did it.
And we made it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think Palmer does like that. They like to have somebody else jump in there first and figure out the pros and cons of it, which is not that bad a thing to do. But I think that right now in these fiscal times, to not capture any revenue that's there, and able to get from tourists or otherwise, that would be sort of a silly thing to do.
Sure.
I think there hasn't been I don't know if there was a report last night about it, Mike. I haven't completely finished reading or listening to the tape, but I don't know what their sales tax projections are, but I would guess as we start seeing for sale signs go up and rental places and prime locations come up, which I'm starting to see, that you're going to start seeing those sales tax revenues go down. And there has to be somewhere to backfill on those if you want to maintain the services that you have.
Sure.
So,
well, let's
so
see.
To be continued, didn't look like there was too much else on there. Now, I was thinking about this last night. This is one of those odd times when the elections are, they're getting ready. This is the last week of filing to run for election for borough assembly, for the city's school board. Unless, like you pointed out before we started on air, they want to do a campaign for a write-in, and then that's a whole different thing. But if you want your name to appear on the ballot, it has to be filed with the clerk this week.
Right.
And so there's a little bit of a distraction now between now and October. As we finish up summer, the fair will be coming up, that sort of thing. But they'll kick it into high gear here pretty soon because they have a budget that will have to be approved by December of this year. And so they'll probably have a keen eye on what's going on with the legislature, who hasn't finished its work either yet.
And also looking forward to the next month as the Borough Assembly completes its work on what is a proposed piece of legislation that would put an item up there on the
sales tax
on the ballot.
Right.
As we look at the variety of issues that the city is going to be talking about, one of them in particular, and they mentioned it briefly last night, was this sales tax thing. And we've also recently had a superintendent of schools, Monica Goyette, come in. Right. And she talked about the sales tax. And my understanding, the other part to it, one, it has to be approved, put on the ballot, and then it'll be voted on. If it's approved by the voters, then it's at least 2 months before it begins. So what we're talking about in terms of impacts, it's going to impact next year's borough budget and next year's school budget, but not the rest of that. So
right,
okay. So
yeah, that will be a big discussion, and that will be at the I think that's on the assembly agenda for next week is not yet out.
Right.
It will be out Thursday evening probably, and it should be a pretty full packet because I don't quite remember, Mike, but I know they've been kicking things down the road to this meeting. So that will be one of the discussions. The school board meeting Wednesday night was just, is going to have some peripheral things on it to do with it. But they should have something either ready to go on the ballot or off the ballot. And it sounds like the cities are taking pretty much the stance they did last time this came up in the ballot, and they're not too enthused with it. Right. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Long time between now and October.
Absolutely. And, of course, there's a long time until later in Thursday, when this state legislature, people have flown back down for one day, called themselves back to vote on the capital budget, which seems
they
to
be... They think they've struck a deal on.
Yeah, when it's thin. And I would guess people would be pushing back if they went down and they weren't able to come to conclusion. That would be like, come on, guys. Maybe they'd be talking about having some other people do the negotiations or something.
Yeah.
And of course,
well, it can't be too much considering the fiscal problem that the state's found itself in, and no real new revenues to come in without any anything on income tax, sales tax, or otherwise for the state. There can't be much of a capital budget there to fight over this year.
Well, a couple of the issues that were sort of muttered about had to do with a small amount of money, $5 million, I think, applied to some aspect of the Knick Arm Bridge and maybe to the highway out of Juneau.
Keeping it alive.
Or maybe not.
No, yeah.
But maybe that's all.
We'll see at the end of the day what it comes out with.
But we've saved the big news, of course, which I think is amazing. And it's, but maybe not so amazing, that on the first vote, for the healthcare in Washington, D.C.
First and second.
Yes, first and second. Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, our two senators, went and looked in different directions. And Lisa's vote attracted the attention of the president, who spoke specifically about her. And this process continues on during the week, we'll see what happens, because she seems to be holding to that. Well, a similar position that John McCain, who voted differently, supported, which is a better process. I think that's what people are talking about. not believing that what has happened will produce something that is actually going to be sustainable, because after you get through voting it, because you didn't quite know what you were voting for, you go down the road and you say, oh my, what have we done?
Yeah. So, you know, I've had several meetings with Senator Murkowski about health care in the state of Alaska. And I think she's been very, very consistent on her message to voters in that saying there needs to be a process that for there's been a lot. She was part of the group that talked about Obamacare not working, or the ACE, the Affordable Health Care Act not working, but that part of her complaint about the bill at the very beginning was that bill not having what she thought was a more robust process. And by comparisons, it was miles above what's been happening here. So I don't think she's ever changed her message about that, that she felt that they needed to get it right, and that they needed to hear from people across the spectrum of on this, that it should actually have a committee process and not some votorama, which is what they're referring to on the 20 hours of debate on the floor. And, you know, she's not backing down on it. And so it was surprising that she was one of two senators. Based on some of her actions earlier, kind of thought she might just go along saying it, well, let's at least get it on the table. But I think she realizes that's not where the sausage making should happen. And you'll probably see on the news tonight, and she's gotten a lot of backlash from it. President Trump had a tweet about it, and she was interviewed, and I think her response is just right on. She said, every day shouldn't be about winning elections. How about we just do a little bit of governing around here? That's what I'm here for. And I think that is a classic and a good remark. She was very clear about it. She said, I'm not up for re-election for till 2020. That's a long time away. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about what's good for my state. And that's what I'm here to do for. And I wish everybody here was, you know, here to do the same thing. So she's made it very clear where she's at. I don't think that Senator Sullivan has surprised too many people by what he has been doing, and that's voting with the how he's always been voting, along with the leadership. But to her to take this step out front and say that I'm not going to go along with the beating drum, I'm actually worried about how this is going to affect my state and the economy of the state, I think she has definitely won a lot of people over that may have been skeptical of her abilities to make hard decisions, because those were some pretty brave ones, I would say personally, that she's made.
Yeah, this is one of the big ones. This is a big vote, a big time.
But having said that, there's a lot more to happen. There's been two votes as we record this, Mike. One on just to bring it to the table, basically, and one to strike down the present bill and come back in 2 years and serve something up. That was just defeated. She voted no for that. And even though, as you made a reference to Senator McCain, that he talked about also wanting a bipartisan process, he voted along with everybody else. He didn't break strides and vote with her.
It'll be interesting to see if he sustains that way, right, or in the bottom, the end of...
This probably won't be over until at least Thursday or Friday.
Right.
Friday, probably. And even if it's done then, if they don't, I don't see any good way out of where they're at right now. If nothing happens by Friday, I think, you know, you've probably heard the end of it for a little while. They have a budget to pass yet, and she's very aware of that fact, that has to be done. They've already cut their recess, their four-week recess in August back to 2 weeks. And after you've been through this type of a drama, they're going to miss having that time. And she comes back to the state for that whole time and really does talk to constituents. So she's, you know, they all want to get back to their state. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I would kind of draw attention to people. Washington Post this morning, I know you read that, Mike. I'm a big reader of Washington Post, and they have a running dialogue on there of where the health care bill is, who's voting for what they voted on, because there's going to be a host of amendments and twists and turns and a lot of shenanigans between now and Friday. And I'd urge people to go to the Washington Post if they want to know what's going on with healthcare.
And the other thing that I've noticed in conversation with people who are involved with senior centers and so on have pointed out that the staff of the facilities, whether you're talking about WASI or
long-term care.
Yeah, long-term care or whatever. This whole uncertainty around Medicaid and Medicare dramatically impacts their operation and a lot of individuals who are older.
Yeah.
And although that's been alluded to a number of times, people have said, well, it'll have this. Now the impact potential is becoming very real. And I think that's something that once done and people begin to experience what it means when we throw out a number like 20 million or whatever and reduce to Medicaid, et cetera, when it becomes personal, I think there's enough time, depending upon how this rolls out, to have an impact on the 2018 election.
Right. Yeah, I think that definitely is a big concern for seniors because Medicaid pays an enormous amount of the amount of costs for people in long-term care. People are very confused about that. They think once they go into these assisted living homes that Medicare pays for all that. It doesn't. And the expansion of Medicaid has really been helpful in those, you know, helping with those costs. So I think she's very keen on knows what the impacts are. I mean, just the in the Better Care Reform Act, I think one of the key one they talked about, it was going to charge seniors five times amount that everybody else. And pre-existing conditions, hard to find anybody that's lived a fair number of years that doesn't have a pre-existing condition. So, you know, you have the insurance companies that don't like it. You have the doctors that don't like it. You have the public that polls that they don't like repealing it. Mm-hmm. There is some confusion about it. And there really are people that are paying way too much. But none of these proposals that I've seen so far, and there's about six of them now, brings down the cost of healthcare.
Sure.
And she's pointed that out, or the cost of drugs. And I think that's why Senator Murkowski wants a comprehensive committee process so that they can actually find out, you know, how they can make those changes too.
Can someone say single payer? I've heard a few people talk more.
Well, I've heard, they did just have a vote as we're doing this, Mike, about returning to the committee process, which she did vote in favor of. It looks like it failed, though, because they didn't have enough votes to do it. So she's taken some brave steps here, but I feel very comfortable with the work that that Senator Murkowski is doing right now.
Okay. Well, we have a minute or two. Any last comments you would like to make?
Nope. I think it's something people ought to, in between the, since there's rain showers, C-SPAN's running all of these hearings, and they can be really mundane, but they're very, very important. And I think people should pay attention to it. And then I'd like to invite everybody to Palmer Pride on Friday.
Right.
Friday, this is the day that Palmer kind of celebrates itself and the residents, the individuals, and businesses that make this a nice place to live. That would be 4 to 6 in the Palmer Depot. I know you go every year, Mike.
Yep.
So
we're going
rain
to
or shine.
Once again bring Palmer Soromakai is going to bring the noodle shoot.
So we'll I don't know which annual one this is, but years and years, Janet Kincaid was just popped in here. We should have asked her. But
well, she'll be back for our listeners, and she'll be talking about it. So
great.
There we go.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for coming in and sharing.